Gap year, RFS waivers, jobs data, another round of tariffs on Canadian aluminum, a crackdown on Chinese technology, and the latest on the next round of the coronavirus. We've got a long list of issues for today's free-for-all, including the first roundtable to discuss Joe Biden's ag and trade policy.
Live from the beginning of the end of the week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and we're proud to welcome Dale Moore from the American Farm Bureau Federation. And right after the news, Jennifer Shike from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Man, you had me a little intimidated with the beginning of the end there. Yeah. I was a little nervous. But
it's a broadcaster's technique. I drew you in, didn't I?
You did.
It's the beginning of the end.
It was starting to feel a little like clickbait there for a second. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Unlike much of the clickbait out there, which is no fun.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. I saw one that was like, ooh, you got to see these pictures of Farrah Fawcett. And she was like wearing turtlenecks on all of them. Come on.
Right.
Clickbait.
Right.
Clickbait.
Yeah, exactly. How you doing, man? Here we
Super
are.
Super great. I moved on from canning salsa to canning pears last night.
Really?
I got 8 cans. Yes, I got 8 cans in the pantry now. I'm going crazy with the canning, brother. I don't know what it is. I got the fever.
Did you buy the pears? Because the pears wouldn't be ready yet, are they?
No, I did purchase the pears
from my
preferred local grocer. But I'm gonna go with some corn this weekend.
Yeah.
Some sweet corn from a local guy.
Look
that lives
you.
Just up the road. We'll see how she goes. But I got to tell you, this corn is what you're looking for. When you say, when you think Iowa sweet corn, this is what you got. So I got to put some away for winter.
Good deal. Good deal. Yeah. Yesterday, the conversation that we had yesterday afternoon with Jerry Goodell and Jack Scoville, who did their annual tour through Central Illinois, turned up some question marks on ear populations.
Yes, it did.
Nobody has questioned that Illinois corn crop for the last 4 or 5 weeks since it started raining. And now all of a sudden we've got these guys saying, yeah, you know what? It looks really good, but I don't know if there's enough there. So we've got some people starting to check. I got some feedback from Southeast Minnesota.
Great.
The ears planted 36, got 30, but out of that 30 that are there, like 5 out of the 30 are very late in developing. So we had some uneven emergence that they are identifying now. It's not as bulletproof as what you might think, is what I'm saying.
Is it too soon to say it ain't in the bin yet? Is it too soon for that?
No, I don't think. I think the timing on that is very, very appropriate. There are some questions. There are some questions about this corn crop that I wonder if there was just a way to answer some of those questions.
If only there were.
Yeah, if we could get a group together, maybe go out on a tour, take a look at
do some counting.
Oh, Pro Farmer Crop Tour coming right up. Don't forget, you got to get registered for those evening meetings.
That's right.
And if you get registered now, Davis, did you see what they've added?
Yes, they. It's very exciting. Very exciting.
Have you got the details right there in front of you? Because I do.
Are you talking about the fabulous prizes?
Yes.
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 If you've got the details, go ahead and read them.
They are giving you, if you register now, you can register for a chance to win more than 1,000 prizes, including a full-size side-by-side utility vehicle. Just go to Farm Journal Field Days. .com for the full contest details. All right, let's get to it. What do you got in the news, buddy?
Well, while lawmakers spent much of the week touting a certain amount of compromise achieved in negotiations surrounding the latest COVID-related stimulus package, larger issues are holding up the measure's passage, and President Trump says he is ready to step in via executive order. After 3 hours of negotiations last evening, both sides blamed each other, accusing each other of not moving enough in bridging the $1 trillion proposed by Senate Republicans and the $3.5 trillion backed by Democrats. The president says he plans to sign executive orders to extend enhanced unemployment benefits and impose a payroll tax holiday this weekend if an agreement cannot be reached by the end of the day. It's kind of like when your dad shows up and you're arguing and he's like, all right, here's what we're going to do.
And Kudlow made it very clear that President Trump is very willing to use the executive order route on this.
Well, speaking at a Whirlpool factory in Clyde, Ohio, yesterday, the president said he has reimposed a 10% tariff on Canadian aluminum. The president said, quote, Canada was taking advantage of us as usual. The aluminum business was being decimated by Canada. Very unfair to our jobs and our great American aluminum workers. The announcement only pertained to 10% tariffs on aluminum from Canada, not the 25% tariff on steel, Chip.
Yeah, we'll get Haney's take on it and Dale's take on it here in just a couple of minutes.
Well, as ethanol producers in the U.S. have been for years reliant on government policy to encourage the fuel's production and use, Green Plains now says it wants to break away from that reliance and plans to invest in projects that will help itself. CEO Todd Becker and his company have lost faith that the government will lend the necessary and mandated support to the industry, saying they will work to neutralize ethanol market volatility for his company and its impacts on their earnings. This, as the Renewable Fuels Association reports, spending on lobbying in Washington is down 12%. From the same quarter last year due to COVID-related restrictions, Chip.
Yeah, make a note there, Joe Stackler. Let's get CEO Todd Becker on this show next week. Talk about it.
And quickly here, finally, President Trump has signed executive orders last night barring Americans from using, barring Americans or those subject to U.S. jurisdiction from transactions with the China-based owners of WeChat and TikTok. Trump's been talking about that for a few weeks now,
right,
Chip?
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into more of the Chinese technology and some of the restrictions that the president wants to put on the use of that technology coming up in just a little bit. All right. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it, buddy. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. We're making some progress on PRRS, huh?
Yeah, well, we had kind of some interesting news came out this week that University of Connecticut researchers identified a compound that can successfully block PRRS virus in vitro experiments. And so there's still more tests that need to be done in actual animal models, but right now they've been able to identify a compound that can effectively block that virus from getting into pig cells.
You know, Jennifer, PRRS is one of those viruses that when it first came up, everybody was talking about it and everybody was talking about the impact. And then it kind of went back burner for a while, but it's still having big time impacts on farrowings, isn't it?
It really does. You know, it doesn't get maybe talked about in the news as much, but, you know, because I think we're just living with it, right? And kind of dealing with it. But they say that it costs the industry about $600 million a year in annual losses. And that's a lot. So if we could find a way to be able to get rid of this disease, that would be great. Or at least it's exciting to have some progress in that area from that molecular standpoint.
Absolutely it is. And when we're talking about $600 million in an industry that is suffering as much as the hog industry is right now, we'll take that. That is for sure. That's good news. All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You bet. That's Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Okay, coming back, we're going to get this free-for-all going. Of course, we've got Sean Haney getting ready to join us. He's with Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Pro Farmers policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer is standing by and ready to go. And Dale Moore, the executive VP for the American Farm Bureau, is ready to roll on the free-for-all on AgriTalk next. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
I just noticed a note from Farm Journal News Director John Harith on here that Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Sorry, buddy, but we're going to have to charge you an extra 10% for being here today.
Oh, that's what this relationship has morphed into.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. What do you make of this? Isn't this crazy?
Well, we're back to the same narrative we were for the last 4 years. It's you know, the president can implement tariffs because he has that ability, and he doesn't have to work with Congress to make it happen. He likes it. It's his go-to. Here's where we are.
Interesting. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. How are you this morning, Jim?
Pretty good, Jeff.
I say we put the steel tariff on Haney and charge him 25%.
Well, the aluminum has election year politics all over it. It's called Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, et cetera. Dale may want to comment on that.
Dale Moore, Executive VP, American Farm Bureau Federation. Dale, thank you so much for making time. And welcome back. It's been just over a year, like a year and a week since you were last on the free-for-all. How are you?
I am doing well. I have to admit, you know, the introduction, I kept waiting for a monster truck to come flying through my, room here, just as like that was quite the intro. Jim is right. These aluminum tariffs are spooky in the sense that, you know, Canada's going to retaliate. What do they retaliate against? Well, if they adhere to the agreement from last year, they'll go after, like products in the U.S., and then it'll be, an aluminum-on-aluminum fight, supposedly. We always get nervous.
Sorry, Dale,
like every time there's a tariff on something, and a country's retaliating against us, it lands on agriculture.
Yeah. Go ahead, Haney.
Well, I was just going to say that there's a lot of criticism here in Canada right now from some of the opposition parties towards the Liberal government that in the USMCA they negotiated themselves into a corner, and Dale kind of alluded to this where they basically are now confined to a pretty narrow path on what they can retaliate against. Before they could, maybe USRVs or boats or whatever, they could take a wide swath, and now they can't. We'll see what they do. The reality is listen, this 10% tariff, it is based on a surge in exports, some saying it's due to COVID. This whole idea that Canada's a national security threat, lumping Canada in with like a Russia or a China, it's more like frustration, I think, from the Canadian side. Is our relationship going down the tubes? No. But it's just right. What are you talking about?
See, and Jim, that's why I shouldn't be making light of it, and I understand that. But I almost can't help it, because to think of Canada as a national security risk is it just seems a little ridiculous to me.
You can use tariffs in the future. I think it is abusing our good ally, Canada, my personal judgment.
Okay. All right. We're gonna move on. Another topic here, because tomorrow is an important anniversary. August 8th is when President George W. Bush signed the Energy Policy Act of 2005, which enacted the original RFS. Now, 2 years later, we got what we're dealing with now for the RFS, RFS 2. But 15 years, Dale, can you believe that we are 15 years into the RFS?
Well, this is where I start to feel old, because just the other day somebody asked me, so like, when did you start at USDA? And that was, coming up on like 19 years ago. And So you think back, 15 years ago, this RFS standard went through. It was a victory for, corn farmers, for the biofuels industry. Soybean folks got excited. And it's been just kind of an ongoing battle to kind of figure out how do we work with the petroleum industry, who feels a little bit put upon from what a friend in that side of the sector has told us. And at the same time, trying to find a balance with these waivers. And like most things, when the law provides a gap, there are some very adept folks that are figuring out how to shoot those gaps. And we just keep hoping that Administrator Wheeler and his team figure out ways to get those doors wedged shut just a little bit tighter.
Jim, what is the latest on the request for those gap waivers? it sounds like some of them are going to be awarded.
Well, Reuters reported there'll be some with partial waivers on that, Chip. But I want to bottom line and go back to your mention of CEO, Green Plains CEO Todd Becker. He said in that excellent interview with Bloomberg, quote, "I don't ever want to be dependent on government policy again." He's disappointed that the industry's lack of discipline, flooding the market with ethanol every time margins increase. As a result, his firm has left the board of Growth Energy to invest in advocacy dollars to maximize shareholder returns. And he said EPA is no friend of ethanol. They've done everything they can to destroy the market for us. They've done everything they can to destroy this industry. But he said the president, who they support, needs to get this EPA administrator in line.
But the thing is, doesn't the buck stop with President Bush on this day? Or President Bush, I'm looking at my notes. With President Trump on this, sorry. If the president was 100% against those waivers and 100% for the RFS, wouldn't he tell the EPA don't issue those waivers?
Well, Becker basically says Trump needs to get his EPA administrator in line because the farmer vote is on the line here, too, and he should act.
Yeah, we've already been down this is like a retro show here. We've been down this road on the fact that the problem is the administrator. We've done that. I agree that this falls on the president to start to make a decision, and it's a tough one because it involves parties both that support him. But you see what happens here when the topic is left, right, or U.S. China, he acts fast, right? Look at the executive orders on TikTok. It happens. The aluminum tariffs on Canada, it happens. This one has drug out for like 4 years and still it's blundering. It's too bad.
Yeah. Dale, what's your take on all this?
Well, I can tell you this is the one where the frustration pops up, and that every time we think we've made some progress, because again, and I'm going to say this right up front, we have been extremely pleased with Administrator Wheeler when we look at things like Waters of the U.S., when we work on things related to, the pesticides and the way he has, put his elbows out and helped deal with things like the dicamba decision and others. There is a point to this, and having had the benefit of being in different chairs around town, working on stuff, the combination of who is pushing from the side and both of them having, frankly, being on, to the point on the right side of the issue, reminds me of my first boss, Mr. Roberts, always talking about, be careful when you ask the government to be your partner. And in this particular case, the industry has got, themselves, the biofuels industry has got themselves a good tool here. But it's like that. I almost feel like at some point going back, there was sort of this feeling that it was never going to be used, that the trigger was not going to be pulled. And these battles occur within agriculture, forget what goes on with the petroleum industry and others, but. We've had times, back in 2012 with the drought going in there where, our livestock, our barnyard was, frustrated and pushing for actions, from our policy to make some adjustments on ethanol. That gets sorted out. But each time, we kind of hit that way back button and we've got to start sorting it out. And, it's like watching my... oldest son loved to play with Legos, and every once in a while he'd get them all built up. And I said, What are you building? He goes, I don't know. And then he'd whack and it'd fall everywhere, and then we'd start all over again.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we are trying to figure out how do we tiptoe to this waiver field in a way that is fair to those that truly need, some kind of waiver for economic survivability, while also gate cutting those opportunities on all sides for folks that are trying to just take advantage of the situation.
Right. Very good. Okay.
That's up for a non-answer.
Well, no, there's some thought that in all of that, Dale. I hear it, and there are a pile of considerations that all go into that. Now, what I want to do when we come back, I want to spend a little bit more time on ethanol. Jim, I'm going to start with you when we come back. What does the RFS look like in 2023? Okay? 3 years from now. What does it look like in 2023? It's a free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, we had another big export sales announcement to China, and beans don't want to respond.
No, really a rough morning of trade here, Chip, to close out the week. And we've talked about it previously, but weather trumps demand at this time of year, and I think that's what's happening right now. We're just pretty cool, honestly, for temperatures here to begin August. There are some rains in the near-term forecast. They will be scattered, but at least there's some rainfall chances. And that's got us under pressure here this morning. Corn futures, they're leaning on the contract lows they posted earlier this week. Soybean market's breaking down technically. And the wheat market, it's actually the SRW contracts are leading us to the downside. So a really rough morning to trade here in the grain and soy market.
Yeah, it has turned really rough. Details on that export sales announcement, 456,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China in the 2020-21 marketing year. Okay, take us over to the livestock trade because we do have some strength in lean hog futures.
Yeah, quite a bit better there for the bulls in livestock trade. Like you mentioned, the hogs, they're trading to the upside. Moderate to strong gains in the front end of that market. Back end, a little bit lesser gains, but strength across the board in hogs. So that's a positive here to wrap up the week. On the cattle side of things, mixed trade, front end of live cattle is higher and the back end lower. And just the reverse is the case in the feeder cattle market with the nearby contract center, a little bit of pressure in the back end showing some strength.
Yeah, and you say it's a good end of the week. Well, it looks like hogs are actually going to close higher for the week. So that's an important move. Thanks, Beej. Have a good weekend. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Valent for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Lurie. We've got a free-for-all going today. Executive VP at American Farm Bureau, Dale Moore, Pro Farmers, Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture, Sean Haney. Okay, Jim, RFS in 2023, what does it look like?
Going to be far bigger than a kerfuffle debate, Chip. We need to know who the players are. I'll guarantee you that if Biden wins the presidency, if he picks EPA Administrator Mary Nichols, you've already got a strike against ethanol because she's well known in town here for being anti-ethanol. We need to know who controls the House and the Senate. But bottom line, Chip, ethanol supporters have to change their debate because we're going to have increasingly less gasoline consumption. They better be creative.
Well, I just got a text from he won't care if I put his name out. Tim Burrock, who's been on the free for all in the past. I think you all know him. GM announced today an electric future, 23 electric cars by 2023. How does ethanol fit into that? Dale, there's lots of things that need to be considered as we look at the future of energy consumption, and electric cars is part of it, right?
Well, absolutely. This is one, we're seeing this. I never thought I would, when electric cars started popping up here just a few years ago and as viable forms of transportation. Now we've got, GM, Ford, Tesla, even though it's kind of the wildest looking pickup I've ever seen. But now they're starting to talk about electric pickups. And yeah. There's a part of me that is fascinated and part of me just trying to figure out how do we How do we pull those kind of technologies together and celebrate how all this comes together? Because a number, you know, my home where I grew up in Kansas, you got folks that, you know, the wind energy and solar energy. And, and we've had folks that have presented, you know, ideas to us about, you know, different ways of solar farms. So you have got, you know, the corn and the bean farmers with the biofuels, but what are those other biomass, other types of renewable energy sources? And this is one, I think Jim's, you know, hit it, kind of drove the nail down with the sledgehammer in terms of this is not going to be just a little discussion up on the Hill or on the executive branch end. It's going to be an ongoing battle as to, you know, who controls the hearts and minds of the energy debate. And I believe that, you know, to that point, we on the agriculture side, just like we have with biotech, we've got to adjust, expand, re-energize our talking points and our reasoning behind how important this is to our industry, and in a, you know, make sure that it is part of an economic approach to energy.
Right.
Well, so in the future, then, does the if we're going to see domestic gasoline consumption go down, does that mean the ethanol export just becomes even more critical 2023 or 2030?
Well, that's one of the most interesting. Yes, I would say is the short answer to that, Sean. But and that's one of the most fascinating things about the whole ethanol industry to me is that you've got these petroleum producers out there that are looking to import U.S. ethanol because they need it as an oxygenate to make their petroleum burn more efficiently. Yet when we explain that here in the U.S. and have some real authorities like Dr. Andy Randolph explain it and the importance of a shot of ethanol, a dose of ethanol in our fuel supply, how important it is in creating the efficiency that everybody is looking for, it kind of falls on deaf ears. You go overseas and it's like, oh yeah, if you don't have that oxygen in there, you don't get the efficient burn and you've got you actually increase your tailpipe emissions and it's just such a confusing roundabout that we are in with the environmental benefits of ethanol. So, but I think we're going to have to spend more time talking about those environmental benefits of ethanol going forward. Okay, got to jump on. Dale, CFAP payments. The last I saw, it's total about $7 billion when there's $16 billion available. Why aren't we seeing a quicker payout from CFAP?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. And again, just going back to, you know, time I spent at USDA, you know, you wouldn't think it'd be that difficult to spend money quickly. But it takes a while to spend it, particularly if you're spending it in a way that, A, the 535, you know, looking over your shoulder folks on one end of the ball, you know, the inspector generals, all of the different folks, particularly in an election year, are saying, so, you know, did Secretary Perdue do this the right way? Our strong belief of Farm Bureau is he absolutely is. But what part of what we are seeing is, you know, we Farm Bureau, and I know other farm groups as well, we ask for enough resources so that farmers of all stripes, all commodities, all impacts were helped. Well, based on what the department initially came out with, you know, based on the information that they had, we commend them for that work, but then they gave us the opportunity to identify, you know, additional gaps in there. And part of that is also on the flip side with COVID-19, FSA offices being very limited, folks going in and out, you know, it's, a lot of this requires that time sitting across or the desk or leaning across the counter and getting some additional information down on those charts, getting the details down. And in some cases, we've heard, and the department's been great about working with all of us in ag on this, is, you know, they've got a commodity that they don't have a lot of data on in terms of price or volume or, you know, the impacts thereof. And so pulling that data together, working whether it's with land grant universities or others to put that on the table, there's still a lot of processing going on just to know who all is eligible for what is available. And that's one of the reasons Mr. Duvall, President Zippy Duvall, our president, just asked them to, you know, can we stretch out that sign-up time? Because folks are still trying to figure out what they have lost and what they are eligible for.
Interesting. Interesting. Jim, you got some takes on that?
Bottom line, I think USDA laid an egg when they initially, you know, provided the details of CFAP and went downhill from there.
Wow.
So, okay, I'm the guy that's a glass half full on this call, and Jim clearly has a hole in the bottom of his glass.
And Dale, the hole is right at the top, and it pours conveniently into his pie hole.
This is why Colin Peterson wants the next aid package, if we get one, to be prescriptive rather than open authority for USDA, and I do not blame him.
That's interesting. I had a conversation with your old boss, Dale, last week, Senator Roberts. And he was trying to remain optimistic on this as well, and he was willing to go ahead and leave the discretion for the coronavirus aid with USDA. And his comment to us here on AgriTalk was that if we went with some kind of a two-week evaluation period where if USDA says, listen, this is how we're going to do it, Mr. Peterson, Mr. Roberts, put your evaluation on it and come back to us with suggestions. He said that in that 2 weeks, it would be like trying to negotiate a new farm bill in 2 weeks to get a total agreement to go back to Secretary Perdue with. He feels like it would slow things down. Is that kind of your take too, Dale?
Well, I learned a lot from that man when I had the chance to work for him for, you know, 13 years. Yeah. And one of the things that he is saying that is right on the money is that, you know, and I understand the frustration, having had the chance to work on the Hill and work at USDA, I guarantee every one of you and anybody listening to this out there, implementing a law that Congress has passed, such as the Farm Bill or a disaster bill, ain't near as much fun as it looks like from the outside.
Yeah.
And giving the secretary the opportunity, because I think what Congress did, and I know there's frustration that some of the oversight, and Chairman Peterson, you know, has, you know, a good thought in that there needs to be more oversight. That's why both of those committees and the appropriators, frankly, the subcommittees, have the authority to do that oversight. How are you spending this money? How is this going down? The other part of this, and I heard both Chairman Peterson, Chairman Roberts, Mr. Conaway, Ms. Stabenow, and members before them say, you know, something like this COVID-19 disaster, there's no real blueprint. Or how do we deal with this? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, saying, Mr. Secretary, here's the resources and here's the prescriptive way you have to spend it. It's the same thing that occurs. It's like, okay, well, we left blueberries off or kumquats or aquaculture. Okay, now right. Congress has got to write a new law.
Right.
Give the secretary the authority, conduct the oversight. And I can tell you, at least my 8 years at USDA, I spend a lot of time answering the telephone and saying, you know, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, no, sir, no, ma'am. We're not trying to undercut what you told us to do, and we'll get that fixed. I think that there's an opportunity there. Now, again, it is an even numbered year divisible by four, so that tension meter is just about pegged.
Right, right. Dale, I got to give you another example of Wiesmeyer and his half glass half full mentality. Because, you know, I mentioned that it's been a year and a week since you've been on the free-for-all. Well, it was a year and a week ago that I was sitting in National Stadium with Jim Wiesmeyer, and he wanted manager Davey Martinez fired on the spot.
True story.
And the Nats go on to win the World Series.
I still want him fired.
Love it, love it, love it. We're going to be back. Wrap up the free-for-all next.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Well, I wish I had. All right, we're going to wrap up this free-for-all. I just want to remind everybody that we've got the Pro Farmer Crop Tour coming up. You can get registered for the evening meetings. We've got the Farm Journal Field Days coming up. Get registered for those. All you got to do is go to, for the Crop Tour, you can go to profarmer.com and register. Just look for the events tab there. Or for the Crop Tour meetings, you can also go to Farm Journal Field Days, and there you can register for the Crop Tour meetings. You can register for the Field Days. You can register for the benefit concert. Lots of things. And get registered for thousands of prizes, including that full-size side-by-side that is going to be given away. Real quick, before we get to China, Jim, today was the self-imposed deadline on the next round of coronavirus aid, and they're going to miss it.
They'll miss it. There's always talks on the weekend. Lawmakers want to go home, but they won't. The Republicans are going to have to get closer to $2 trillion. Okay. Because Trump's executive orders will not fly in the court system, Jeff. Most of them.
Really? They won't?
No. No, they'll put it into court.
So the payroll tax holiday will not fly?
That could be. But I just think that this town, as Dale will know, loves to spend money. So I think if that's part of the equation, you heard the Democrats say, just meet us in between. That means a $2 trillion or a little above.
Wow. Wow, that seems crazy to me. I want to go to Haney on this one first. Just make sense out of China for me, Sean.
Oh, boy. Well, the trade war has now entered the tech realm. And I think this is where it gets super interesting. I think you need to preface all of this with there are legitimate concerns about the ownership of TikTok and what is possible from an espionage data privacy standpoint. The question is, what is the best path to rectify those concerns? And we've moved this week from where the White House is trying to force a sale of TikTok. And then, by the way, taking a cut on the way through.
Yeah, I don't get
which
that,
is
but okay.
Fascinating to me, and the idea. And now we're on to just outright banning WeChat and TikTok. Now, here's what does China do next, Chip? And I think that's one of the most interesting parts of this drama. You want to see the market have some major, major issues is if China retaliates against companies like Tesla, you know, Apple, mm-hmm. and others where, you know, they've really kind of been able to have some growth during all of this COVID situation because China has moved past COVID quicker than the U.S. has. Yeah. And a lot of those earnings are based on what Chinese consumers are doing, especially with Tesla. So this is going to take some very, very dark turns.
It's a strange, it feels like we've digitized a Cold War, doesn't it, Dale?
Well, it... I like that. I'm going to have to feel that. That is good. Because, yes, that's where we are now. That, I had a gentleman stop by to do a little work on the house this morning, and he said, "You're not working." I said, "Well, actually, I am. But, it's been since March since I've actually been in my office at work. But all this technology, and you start pulling one of those pegs out, and we think about how agriculture in the United States and agriculture in North America is so intertwined, you know, as the industries that they go through. And I got to believe that the tech industry, both of my sons are in the tech side of life. And I am fascinated it's like a three-dimensional spider web that goes everywhere. They're all connected. And, you start pulling on those threads. I don't understand the technology half the time. I know which button to push. But if the fight goes into, literally a cyber war, I don't have to worry about the fallout so much. The real fallout is the virtual fallout that just locks us up communication-wise.
Right, right. See, I think that's a point that a lot of people miss right there, Dale. I've talked about this with my son and my in particular and said, and he's like, "Yeah, but come on, TikTok, what are they going to get from it? What are they going to learn from it?" And I said, "What if they can shut your phone off through it?" And he's like, "Yeah, no, that would be a problem." Because now all of a sudden, we're forced to go back and communicate the way that we used to. I mean, can you imagine the a lot of parents, including me, if I couldn't at a moment just reach out and talk to my daughter and say, hey, how is my granddaughter doing?
Yes.
Oh,
you get cranky in a big dang hurt.
You better believe it. That is exactly right. So that's what the concerns are here. It's locking us up and tying us up.
Does it stop, Chip? Okay, like it's fine. Like for a lot of people, they're like, okay, yeah, TikTok, just ban it. We're good. But where does this stop in terms of creating a greater separation between the U.S. and Chinese economies? I'll give you an example. It's an ag one. What if all of a sudden the White House had the idea, you know what? In order for Syngenta to sell seed in the U.S., China's got to sell it. A U.S. company has to own. Like that's the path that we're currently on here.
That's been tossed around, Sean. That is being tossed around in farm country. You know, if we can't trust TikTok and we can't trust WeChat and we can't trust Huawei, should we trust seed from Syngenta? Now, I am not suggesting that we can't. I am not suggesting that whatsoever. But that's where the conversation has gotten
to.
Scary. Well, Jim, tell us how important the trip to Taiwan is.
This is not me. This is from one of ProFarmer's China watchers told us this morning, I'm afraid the relationship will further deteriorate from the low point today. Cabinet Secretary Azar's visit to Taiwan on Sunday and all the TikTok and Chinese tech companies means that the talks between Lighthizer and his counterpart in China in a few days could be pivotal. So I hope China will continue to be able to separate their trade needs from any reaction to the U.S. and all these other trade issues. If not, agriculture is going to have another new major negative.
Gotcha. Dale, 15 seconds.
I just want to say one of the things that a mentor told me this. He is a career employee at the executive branch, that if we really wanted to stop this war with China, the one thing we need to quit importing from them is their money, their investments into the U.S.
Interesting.
And
very
I don't know
good.
How you stop that.
Dale, thank you so much for making time for us. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Sean, have a great weekend. Good stuff. We've got Angie Setzer, Citizens Grains, this afternoon.